How have you not seen this?
Welcome back to How Have You Not Seen This. As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today I'm joined by a special guest host, Chris Cohen.
How you doing?
And we're actually flipping the tables, turning the tables rather this time. So Chris Cohen will be hosting today's episode, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
Flipping the tables is actually accurate for the movie we just watched. Roadhouse. Unofficially, the official record for broken tables and chairs in a movie.
Yeah.
I'm actually shocked that when you asked me to do this that you'd never seen Roadhouse, for the simple fact that it has been played, other than Shawshank Redemption, probably more than any movie on TBS and Spike and TNT since its release. I've probably seen the movie 30 times. Maybe three times start to finish, and with the curse words and nudity, but generally you pick it up somewhere about the time Sam Elliott comes into the movie, and then it just rolls from there.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, what was your initial reaction? How have you not seen this, I guess, with its airtime?
Yeah. Part of it, I remember being a kid and seeing it on from time to time. And for whatever reason, whoever I was with be like, oh, you can't watch Roadhouse. Like, it's too violent, it's too gore. I was like, well, it's on cable, so, like, it's edited because kids watch TV all the time, like, unsupervised. And then, well, and also, like, knowing that, this movie was way less gory than I thought it was going to be. Save for, like, the throat rip scene. Which still, not, like, terrible by like, our standards today. And then when I would see it on, like, as an adult, as a person who didn't have my mom or aunt or whatever telling me that I couldn't watch Patrick Swayze and Sam Elliott being dreamy and just karate kicking dudes, like, I would always catch it when it was well into the movie, and I was like, I feel like backstory is probably not super important, but I hate catching a movie in the middle and, like, not being able to experience it for the first time all the way through.
Nah, I completely agree with you. There's a ton of movies like that where they're on generally, like... Like, they'll show, like, a movie like Kick-Ass on cable, and you're like, really? I'm going to watch this on cable? It's going to be 17 minutes long.
Yeah, so exactly.
You kind of get that, so it's like, if I'm going to watch it, I want to watch it, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I guess that makes sense.
Well, we mentioned on a previous episode, my first exposure to the Die Hard movies was Die Hard 2. I caught the very end of it on TV. So for, like, 2 years of my life, I thought that the catchphrase was Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon. Like, because that was my introduction to John McClane.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's like the movie Tremors. I first watched it on TBS or TNT, and the line where there's two of the earthworms or whatever they're called, I can't remember. On the cable version, they say, we have two mother humpers. And it's completely overdubbed. So
yeah.
We used to call each other mother humpers in college all the time. Just from that line. So it's actually funnier than the original line, obviously.
Oh, yeah. That's a solid fucking movie, though. I should do Tremors on this podcast.
I haven't seen it in a while.
Oh, I bought the box set a couple of years ago. Nice. And they made four of them. And the fourth one is a prequel, and it's a Western, and it's fucking weird.
They make so many sequels to crappy movies, like this has a sequel, Roadhouse 2, I heard of it, but I didn't want to believe it. For example, Revenge of the Nerds is one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. Obviously, everybody knows about two, but they have three and four, even five, and it's like watching one of your favorite bands just keep putting out too many albums. It's like, you should have stopped it, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was exactly what happened, because we literally, like, just finished doing Die Hard 2 through 4 with Lisa Barry and Laura Sanders, and they were so excited, because, like, Lisa Barry had never seen Die Hard, and we did that a little while ago. So, I introduced Lisa into that entire franchise, and they loved the first three, and then we got to four, and they were just so heartbroken. I was like... Oh, man, this is like, imagine building your life up around this and then seeing that happen.
It's almost like the fourth Batman in the first Batman series. First one, great. Second one, you know, good, but, you know, not as strong. And then it just goes down. Yep. And then you get to Batman and Robin with the nipple suit.
Yep.
And
it's like, oh.
They broke the superhero rule of having, like, 14 supervillains in there.
Right? Yeah,
yeah. They're like, this is the last one. We got to cram them all in to make the fanboys happy. And they end up ruining it.
Yep.
So, you know, that's... Sometimes you make a good movie, you gotta stop.
There's not okay to pump the brakes.
Right, yeah. There's not No Country for Old Men 3 around there. No. You know, or something like that, so.
Well, that's why I always love the jokes, like, on The Simpsons, like, when they find the secret ending of Casablanca with the happy ending, or when Mel Gibson remakes Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and ends with him, like, impaling a dude with the flag and, like, killing everyone in Congress with the machine gun.
Exactly.
Oh.
Yeah, you can overdo it.
Absolutely. But, alright, that's my fault. I steered us off big time.
Nah, let's that's get right. back we, to we Roadhouse. Brought up a lot. You might have a potential podcast from that conversation.
Yeah. But I like this a lot. I really did. And I know I made the comment while we were watching it that, like, a lot of movies, like, they'll include certain things that you can just look at and be like, this was made in the 80s.
Oh.
And Roadhouse, just start to finish, like, is just all those tropes.
Opening scene, neon bar.
Yep.
Don Johnson, Miami Vice look to it. Everyone, like, hair just blown out. Dudes with hair almost as long as the girls. Tons of hairspray.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That whiny guitar solo, like,
yeah.
Could be sexy, could be rock and roll, what's going on? And slow intro, people coming in the bar, like, you're just like, this screams 1980s.
Oh, yeah, so 100%. Much of it. And that's also, I love that, like, by the end of the movie, the Double Deuce is transformed into, like, this shit-kicker roughhouse bar, like, complete with the band, like, caged in, like, in that bar that they go to in Blues Brothers.
Yeah,
and then by the end, like, you even made the comment, like, it looks like a club, like, in an episode of Miami Vice.
In Jasper, Missouri.
Yeah, yeah.
In one of the scenes, the antagonist, Brad Wesley, mentions that a JCPenney is coming to town all because of his work.
Yeah.
And yet, there's one of my favorite scenes is there's 180 people waiting to get in the Double Deuce, like, halfway through the movie because it cleaned up that much. And the town's population is probably 1,300.
Yeah.
And apparently everyone in that town is 21 to 46.
Yep.
And they love the Double Deuce.
And they just, there's one babysitter getting a shitload of work that night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They all have, luckily, tween kids to watch each other's younger kids. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, a lot of character actors in this, too, we kind of found out.
Yeah, you watch it, and you're like, I know that guy, and you're, like, dying to know. You get on.
Yeah,
it's
one
of those IMDb movies where you're like, oh, you're looking at the eighth person, and then
he was like, oh, they're person. This, yeah. Right. Well, the craziest one for me is that the villain in this is Jackie Treehorn from Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Like, because we did Commando recently for the action series with Matt Monta, and it was, and there's this final fight, like, jumping ahead a little. But in the end of Commando, Arnold Schwarzenegger fights that dude Bennett, who's just not an intimidating guy, like wearing a mesh shirt, like looks like Freddie Mercury.
That's
and
my number one take from that movie, is that dude looks like a guy that they just pulled off of Waiting for the Bus.
Yeah.
Put on this chainmail sleeveless shirt there, whatever the hell it is, and
yeah.
fight Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. Like,
that's what this felt like. It's like, hey, Ben Gazzara, like the actor, who's this older guy, he reminded me a lot too, like, he looked very similar to the same dude that plays Belloc in Raiders of the Lost Ark. And like, you're gonna fight Patrick Swayze, who's young, like, physically in his prime,
right.
Who spends probably a solid quarter of the movie just doing shirtless karate.
He was shirtless most of the movie.
Yeah,
other than in the bar. Like, if he was out of the bar, he pretty much had his shirt off.
Yeah.
Unless he was going to the bar or leaving the bar.
Yep.
So, you want to run down the plot for those who haven't seen this?
Yeah,
so
basically the entire premise of this movie, Patrick Swayze works as a cooler, which I guess is just a fancy way to say the head barback bouncer or whatever.
It's like a super bouncer.
Like,
I don't like bouncers personally. I've had my run-ins with them over the years. He's like the guy that can, he's like the leader of the bouncers. Like, they don't have any fighting skills. They're just guys that like to fight, basically.
Yeah.
Or think they're tough, and he just comes in, and he's just smooth and cool. And he makes all his money being a cooler by going into the most dangerous dive bars in America.
Yeah.
And apparently, somehow, there's this network, pre-internet, pre-cell phone, of bar owners that know who these coolers are.
Yeah.
And he's supposedly one of the best, and he gets hired immediately right off the bat to come to the Double Deuce in Jasper, Missouri, and be the cooler.
Well, I think you summed it up best very early on in the movie. You said this movie is essentially Bar Rescue before Bar Rescue existed.
It's Bar Rescue with fighting, basically.
Yeah,
right? Like, these bars are unsalvageable, and one of the opening scene at the Double Deuce is so over the top, it's amazing.
Yeah.
They go in the Double Deuce, and within probably, what, 45 seconds, everyone is fighting in the bar.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like,
broken
everyone.
Bottles, knives, broken tables. Everyone that's not fighting is passed out drunk.
Or Patrick Swayze.
Or Patrick Swayze. Or dealing drugs or having sex. Or, like, it's just, like, an orgy of fucking misfits just doing whatever needs
just
to be
like,
done.
Ah, fuck it. Let's just fight. Yeah. And all the fight gets triggered in the weirdest way. Like, some of these scenes... Like I said, I like this movie. I really did enjoy it. But some of these scenes are so bizarre. Like, how did they get from this point to this point? The fight kicks off because a dude says, hey, I'll give $20 and I'll let you kiss my girlfriend's tits.
Right.
And then he just stands by and watches this dude grope on his girlfriend's tits for a while. And then he's like, hey, are you going to pay up? The guy's just like, oh, I don't have $20. And then he slugs him.
He punches him, knocks him into a table. Which starts a chain reaction, like a domino effect.
Yeah, that's when he gets knocked into Terry Funk, and then
Terry Funk, one of the bouncers, pro wrestler Terry Funk, is in the movie as one of the bouncers of Double Deuce early on, and just starts a melee.
Yeah,
bartenders fighting staff, people throwing at the band who's still playing, by the way, which is amazing.
Yes.
Bottles exploding off the chicken wire screen, and they're still playing away with their electric guitars.
They're committed. They're professionals.
Yeah, that's true.
And Patrick Swayze is standing idly by the whole time, just assessing everything about the bar because he's not on the clock yet.
Right,
like, he hasn't started.
Hey, he has to take it all in.
Yeah.
He has a neutral observer before he gets involved. He has to assess the situation, and he does make some changes early on.
Yeah, absolutely. Trims the fat, gets rid of all the guys that are dealing and shit.
Yeah.
And then throughout that, and then eventually this Brad Wesley guy comes in.
Yeah.
And I still don't understand, like, some of the way he works, I guess. Because, like, his whole thing is like, oh, these people have made me rich. I'm going to make them richer. Like, you're already doing okay. Like, how much richer is this one little bar possibly going to make you?
Well, yeah, so the movie turns into a different movie with Brad Wesley's introduction. He is the antagonist in the movie. And so Dalton, who's Patrick Swayze's character, is the cooler at the Double Deuce. He's cleaning up the bar. And early on, there's this foreboding with this Brad Wesley character. He's a super rich guy, and he's an asshole. He buzzes his helicopter over the farmer's horses and gets them riled up. Mm-hmm. And he runs Patrick Swayze off the road because he's singing and swerving in his Mustang. Like, and it turns out this guy is basically like the hillbilly mafia.
Yeah.
He's extorting every business owner in town with the Jasper Improvement Fund and cleaning at least 10% off the businesses. And he's hired the cops and all the muscle, and anyone that doesn't pay gets dealt with rudely. And so how Brad Wesley and Dalton get involved is... the bartender is skimming from the till. He's taking money and putting his pocket off the shots. And Dalton fires him. And it turns out he's Brad Wesley's nephew. And so Brad Wesley has a problem with this.
Yeah.
And then it rapidly escalates.
Yeah. Well, I love to, like, Brad Wesley's problem with it is like, oh, just give my son his shitty job as a bartender back. He's like, you're the nephew of the richest dude in probably several neighboring counties. Why are you skimming the till at all?
Right.
Like, it seems pointless. Also... you got fired. Again, your uncle's rich. Like, from as near as I can tell, his nephew just lives at that mansion.
It seems that his nephew, who, by the way, is extremely old. We're not talking like a 20-year-old actor. We're talking
like he's almost as old as Brad Wesley.
He seems like he's within about 5 to 10 years within Brad Wesley.
Yeah.
He's got a full mustache. And one of the favorite things about it is... like many characters in this movie, he pulls a knife. Dalton gets a knife pulled on him four or five times.
Probably like every other scene he's in. Yeah. Like almost...
broken glass knife. Even a knife on a boot.
Yeah.
The old boot tip
knife. The new...
just one of my favorite scenes, too.
I think the only fight he doesn't get a knife pulled on him is the one where he rips the dude's throat out at the end. But then he gets a gun pulled on him. So he always gets something pulled on him, and it's usually a knife.
Yes. Yeah, usually a knife, and then it escalates to guns. They're building. They got to build up. Build the climax.
and then it dies back down to a spear at one point.
There's a spear involved. So basically the plot of the movie is beyond that. There's not much to it. He realizes this Brad Wesley has his fingers deep in this town, and the cops are bought off, and Brad Wesley's trying to shut the bar down by cutting the liquor supply off. So basically every night Brad Wesley's thugs come into the Double Deuce, and Dalton and the team roll them, and then they come right back for more, and it just gets escalating. And he falls in love with a local doctor, played by Kelly Lynch, and she apparently was the apple of Brad Wesley's eye, so once again another layer of the conflict between these two builds up. And then it just escalates from there with a surprise appearance halfway through the movie by Sam Elliott.
Oh, beautiful appearance.
It's hilarious because Sam Elliott in the movie, this movie was made in the late 80s, looks old back then.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is apparently Dalton's mentor as a cooler. Mm-hmm. So he's older, tougher, not as fast anymore, but he's still got some tricks, like that type of character.
Yeah.
And so he makes an appearance to help Dalton out. And then... And it just goes on from there. I don't know if you do the full reveal.
I think that's a pretty good summary of it. I want to talk about this before I forget.
Yeah.
The scene where they start getting alcohol supplier after they go around, and Dalton goes to receive the delivery, and a bunch of Brad Wesley thugs show up and just start beating the shit out of him.
Yeah.
As the fight starts, like the biggest dude in the group just continues smashing containers of whiskey. Like the fight's going on, and he's still, like, clearly in the frame, just picking up boxes, throwing them on the ground, and he doesn't join the fight until he smashed every crate of alcohol.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's four or five crates on the dolly. The top one was Drambuie. I don't know what the bottom four were. I saw him, and Dalton wants the delivery of liquor, which he had to call in a special favor, because, of course, Brad Wesley controls all the beer distributors.
Yeah, he controls everything, just because he's rich. That's how being rich works.
He's in a town of 1,300 people, but his tentacles stretch across the Midwest, apparently. So, the bar is full of bouncers and staff and personnel, and no one bothers to help Dalton out, and a pickup truck pulls in, and like you said, the best part is... So he starts ninja kicking these dudes to make sure the booze can get in the bar and they can still make money. But the lurch looking guy.
He's like
7 feet tall. He's huge. Terry Funk and then the fat guy with the cat hat and then the other guy proceed to get ninja kicked repeatedly. But Lurch, who is maybe what? A foot and a half away from these three people getting ninja kicked in
like
the
face. It's on a loading dock, so there's not a lot of room to maneuver.
We're talking like a kitchen size area.
Yeah.
And he's a foot and a half away, and he's like, I'm not jumping in yet. I gotta smash this Drambuie. It is great. He picks up at least two crates while the fight is in its full.
Yeah, but like you see 100%. Him continue smashing. And then Sam Elliott comes out there, gets called Dickless. Yeah. And that's one of my favorite lines. He just looks at me and goes, I ain't showing you my dick, boy. And then just cock punches the biggest dude in the fight.
Yep.
And then proceeds to kick the shit. There's also a lot of knees getting kicked in this movie.
The go-to move other than knife pulling is a smash knee.
Yeah,
and they love the smash knee. But what's weird is if you notice on two of the scenes, they kick behind the knee, which is the way the knee's supposed to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guy's like, my knee's blown out. And then, like, in the next scene, the same dude's back, and he's completely fine. He's not limping or anything. So, they didn't do much research on ACL, MCL, injuries, or anything. It was pretty much like, this is the way it's supposed to go.
This works. There's also one of my other favorite scenes. Just in terms of the ridiculousness, there's the scene where Patrick Swayze, where Dalton goes out to talk to Kelly Lynch's character.
Yes, Elizabeth, I think is her name.
Yeah, Elizabeth. And in the parking lot, it's nighttime, two of Brad Wesley's henchmen are parked in this gigantic monster truck, which they have been seen in by Dalton numerous times throughout the movie now, and he doesn't notice it.
Yeah, so the monster truck is like their vehicle of evil. It's in every scene where some ass-kicking or a business that doesn't pay gets burnt down or blown up.
They drive a monster truck through like a car dealership.
Yep.
And then at that point I'm like, all right, I don't know how deep, like his fingers can go as deep as they want into law enforcement.
Yeah.
There's so many problems right there. It's like, I refuse to believe that nobody came in at that point.
I know it's pre-social media when this movie was made, but you would think at some point some cop would be like,
it's willful destruction of property, trespassing probably essentially, because I'm sure he asked those guys to leave, and all number of things, and you've got literally like 200 eyewitnesses that saw these assholes against the dude that owned the place's wishes just drive a monster truck through there and destroy like 7 cars.
What's more horrible about the scene where he smashes up the Ford dealership is, first off, the guy's tie was awesome. It was the American flag tie. I love that guy's tie. I want it. But beyond that, so there's about 200 witnesses at this point.
Yeah.
Because Brad Wesley is planning on destroying this guy's Ford dealership. And they make it seem in that scene like it's spontaneous. Because the Ford dealer, Fred Stoudemire, is like, don't smash up my dealership. And he's like, oh, like, and he's like an older guy. And he's trying to waddle around. And then they fire up the monster truck. But clearly about 200 people are there to watch it.
Yeah.
So it's either been announced or this has been going on for quite a while.
Yeah. Everybody's like, oh, here's some monster trucks about to drive through a Ford dealership.
What's funny is about 60% of them cheer.
Yeah. That's so fucking bizarre. At the end. It's like, do these people, do they not understand what is happening in front of them right now?
Definitely one of the biggest plot holes in the movie. Not that this is an Oscar winning film or anything, but... About 60% of them cheer.
Yeah.
And then they cut away and they show Patrick Swayze and his team of good, and they're not cheering. And then the next scene, they cheer again, but it's only Brad Wesley's thugs, like six of them.
Yeah.
So, like, either everyone's cheering the whole time. It's not like, yeah, smash up the dealership. Ah, you know what? I've got morality all of a sudden. That's probably not a good thing for Mr. Stoudemire. Which is, I love, like, the disconnect on that scene. That was one of my favorite kind of errors in the movie.
Yeah.
Another one that I loved, if you look really close, there's a scene where the nephew bartender pulls a knife on Dalton when he wants his job back.
Yes.
And he doesn't just pull a knife. He pulls like a Bowie knife.
Yeah.
Like a scalping knife.
Yeah, like he's going to go field dress a deer immediately after.
He pulls his combat knife out and he's like, I always wanted a piece of you, Dalton. Which is funny because he just met him the day before.
It's like, nah, I've known you for 24 hours, but man, if I wanted a shot at the title.
And the great thing about the guy with the combat knife is he is even less athletic looking than anyone else in the movie. He honestly looks like a homeless guy. He's always wearing a sleeveless t-shirt with stains on it.
Yep.
He's got one of those awful mustaches. You know, like some guys just have awful mustaches.
But he has like a sex offender mustache.
He has a sex offender mustache. He looks like the guy in middle school that had the 16 hair mustache where you could count every hair.
Yeah.
And then got older and they just got darker. It looks like that. It's absolutely terrible. Like one of the Mexican banditos from Clint Eastwood, like one of those bad, like awful, just. So he pulls his knife out, and Dalton goes to punch him in the face. If you look, it's not very hard to notice this. There's blood on his nose before he gets punched.
Yeah.
And I love that, too. Like, they smeared blood on his face, took a fake punch, and then he gets thrown through the window.
Yeah.
Which is awesome, too. And the other thing I noticed about this movie is Dalton does some martial arts, and he's a philosophy major from NYU, so they try to build some depth to the character,
mm-hmm.
but he never does any philosophy.
No.
And he only does the martial arts in the one scene. And if you notice, almost every scene that Dalton fights in, he gets slashed, stabbed, punched, or generally gets the shit beat out of him.
Yeah, he's a dog shit fighter.
Yeah, it's like the most realistic fight scene in the movie was from They Live, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a great scene. The alley,
You know, Roddy Piper's fighting, and that's what a fight is actually like.
And it's like 5 minutes long, just very prolonged.
Yeah, like until you both get tired and stare at each other and like, God, this sucks. Like that's how generally fights go.
Yeah, yeah.
Dalton's fights are somewhat realistic in the fact that it's not like a Seagal hand slap, throat punch. Like he actually takes a lot of damage throughout the movie.
Well, and most of the fights are just straight up brawls, too.
Yeah, yeah, like, they're bar brawls with bottles. There's a bottle smashed. I would say if you played a drinking game to knife pulls and bottle smashing and table smashing, you would be hammered by the end of the movie.
Oh, probably by the halfway point.
Probably by the halfway point. Yeah, so that was one of the funny things is Dalton's this legendary cooler badass, and he just gets abused.
Yeah, but he gets results.
Yeah, he never loses, as he says later in the movie. So ultimately, he wins, but he pays a heavy, heavy toll.
Yeah, well, and then like there's that scene with the doctor when he after he gets cut up by the nephew, where he shows her his medical chart. And it's almost just like a very condensed version of that monologue from Jaws where they're comparing all their scars and everything. Yeah. The doctor, I know I mentioned this while we're watching it too. She the first time she shows up to see him outside of the hospital is when they're in the middle of a big brawl.
Yes.
Right outside the Double Deuce, the dude with the boot knife.
Yeah.
And she's totally cool with that. Like, she's fine. She's like, oh, he just, like, almost broke a dude's leg in front of me and just whipped the shit out of some people. Yeah, I'll go around with them.
That's what's great about the movie is his interaction with the doctor who he dates, Kelly Lynch's character. The first scene is he meets her at the hospital emergency room where she's stitching him up from a knife wound.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's one. Then she comes to the Double Deuce, which has a reputation as the worst place on earth.
Yeah.
She comes there in a short dress, hair blown out, 80s style. And as she walks up through the dirt parking lot, he's rolling drunk guys, including knife boot guy. And there's a big melee in front of the bar because you got to take it outside, which only happens in that one scene. Pretty much.
Yeah,
all the fighting goes on inside. So they do that fight. And then they go out, and their relationship blossoms from there. So she saw this. She's met this guy once, shirtless Patrick Swayze, cut, and then getting in a brawl. And she's a doctor. What's even funnier is throughout the scene is he chain smokes throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Which, as an ex-smoker, I can tell you, people that smoke that much don't kick a lot of ass. Because you lose your stamina.
Yeah.
For one, and for two, she's a doctor. So even though it's the 80s and it was a little different, she has no problem with the fighting and the knifing and the chain smoking. So it's just a minor thing that kind of gets on my nerves.
Yeah.
It's funny, I have no problem with the fight scenes as much as shit like that.
But just how it would affect what kind of shape you're in.
Right.
Sam Elliott even has that line later when they're out, they've been out all night, and Patrick Swayze starts looking terrible. Sam Elliott's just dancing in a breakfast diner to George Strait songs.
Yeah.
He even says something like, he's great out the gate, but he's not much for distance or something like
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, if I smoke that much, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then I love later, also, the first time they have sex, no condom. Because, they
another
go straight
doctor
for
thing.
Undressing. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, and she knows that he's traveled around a lot. She's like, no, I'm a doctor. I can't get STDs or whatever her logic was.
Yeah, well, we talked about this during the movie, too. There's two sex scenes in the movie. They're not overly graphic or anything.
No.
The first scene is one of the guys that gets fired is banging apparently, 16-year-old who came in with a Sears credit card to the Double Deuce because it's a shithole. And he's just hitting it doggy style. And what's great is Dalton walks in, and this stuff like this, this is what's funny. This is what bothers me in movies. I can watch a superhero movie, have no problems with any, because it's supposed to be fake.
Yeah.
But in a real movie, so this guy's banging this girl, and then Dalton walks in, and he pulls his pants, his underwear immediately up, and there's no boner or anything. Not that I'm going to see that, and clearly it wouldn't make the director's cut, but it's just hilarious. It's those minor things I notice that are fantastic. It's almost like they were just like, if we keep rubbing our genitals together, I'm going to get an erection in about 42 minutes.
It was foreplay.
Right, that's the foreplay.
That's what the Swayze and Elizabeth scene was like.
Oh, the Swayze Elizabeth sex scene was great, too, because they slow dance. Of course, now this is in the 80s, so there's no iPod, or he doesn't have a tape deck. He's actually living above a barn. So he has to go through the AM or FM radio dial to find a sexy song. And the first one you said was...
It was Quiet Riot,
Riot.
Some air metal sound, something or other.
Right, or Enough's Enough, or Britney Fox or something. Hanoi
Rocks.
Some 80s, Hanoi Rocks. It's some 80s glam band or early 80s like what they called metal back then, metal band. And then they're like, nope. And then they turn it, and it's just at the perfect start of a 50s, late 50s, early 60s, sexy time song.
I love, too, I was thinking that as that song was playing, it just sounded like Unchained Melody from Ghost.
It was just
that was
like that.
All I could think of.
Yeah. And so, they start dancing, and then penetration immediately. He picks up the dress, and it's go time.
But it's also, I love, too, I will say, one of the realistic things that the movie does, first times are awkward a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And he has those moments where, he doesn't look like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And, very awkwardly, cups her head, and just all this other stuff. I was like, no, oh, I'm buying this. Oh, not going to warm her up. Just going to lift up the dress and go to town. I don't buy that part.
No. Well, what even was weirder was the scene where Wade Garrett, who's Sam Elliott's character, dances with Kelly Lynch's character, Dr. Elizabeth, is he's actually more intimate with her in the diner at 6 a.m. than Patrick Swayze was, because they're dancing, and then he puts both his hands behind her neck, and they're forehead to forehead.
Yeah, very
close. Patrick
close.
Swayze's right there.
Just cool with it.
And he's like, we're just dancing. Sam Elliott makes me look like I just haven't went through puberty yet. Brr, 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 brr. And And Patrick's like, eh, he's probably just telling you some lies. But, like, they're, like, in full, like, we're going to throw down in the backseat mode.
It was just
pretty funny.
Well, because she says to him, she's like, oh, is this the part where you tell me how great your friend Dalton is or whatever? He's like, oh, no, this is the part where I tell you to want you for myself.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no, it looks like it. It looks like it.
Because Dalton's nodding off over there. It looks like he nods off. He's going to throw her on the diner counter and just go to town.
Yeah.
So that was kind of awkward. Plus, the other funny thing that I noticed about that diner is they have a Colt 45 sign.
Yeah.
In the diner, which they're in Jasper, Missouri. There's one black guy in the movie.
Yep.
One of the bartenders named Ernie. Very minor, doesn't pop in until about halfway through. He's not in the original Double Deuce. He's part of the revamp.
Yeah.
So apparently part of the revamp was hire minorities.
Yeah.
And they hired the only one in town. But they have a malt liquor Colt 45 sign in the diner at 6 a.m. And every table has some brewskis on it. So in Jasper, Missouri, other than Brad Wesley taking your business's money, it's the funnest place on earth, apparently.
Yeah.
Because you can get smashed on Colt 45 at the diner, you know, you get Denny's, and then you go down to lunch, and they're serving some booze there, and then you go to the Double Deuce and kick some ass, and you call it a day.
But I also have to assume that with them dancing to George Strait, the rest of that jukebox playout reads, like, Merle Haggard and David Allan Coe.
Oh, absolutely.
And like, it's just, that's it. Just, like, 30 copies of each of their albums.
Yeah, if you want it mixed up, you gotta go, like, Patsy Cline. Like, that's the diversity. Is you get some from the 50s, like, you get some Boxcar Willie, and then maybe beyond, way past that, maybe there's one Steve Miller CD in that jukebox.
Maybe Jolene by Dolly Parton slips in somewhere.
Yeah, something snuck in there, which is great.
Oh, one of the other things that I love, because I didn't know what to expect going into this. All I knew was that Patrick Swayze was this badass dude who goes to work at this dog shit bar as, like, their new bouncer. And I thought it was going to be about them, like, I don't know, like, fighting just, like, a biker gang or something. I didn't see, like, the Brad Wesley angle coming at all. What? So that was really an interesting direction for it to go in.
What's great about this movie is usually when you watch a movie, there's another movie like it. Like, I love superhero movies, but there's tons of superhero movies.
Yeah.
I love 80s action movies, you know, in the 80s it was all ex-Vietnam, like that was the angle for the hero, anti-hero, whatever. There's no movie where a bouncer takes on a mafia king in a town of 1300. Like, he's basically the non-Italian mafia, and his only goal is to just get richer off these people.
Yeah.
And a bouncer takes him on, like, which is just bizarre. It's just such an odd plot for a movie. It's so ridiculous that you can't really dispute anything in it to a point, because you're like, there's not another movie.
No. Like, well, especially because, like, even that, like, it's still, even though it's so different, it still culminates in that, like, storming the enemy's stronghold at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Which is, again, is not a sequence I thought I was going to see in this movie.
Right.
I expected it to end, like, almost immediately after he had the fight with
Jimmy.
Jimmy. And then rips his throat out, and I was like, all right, I guess the cops are just going to come now. Because that seemed like a really natural ending point. And I was like, no, just kidding. There's 25 more minutes left.
One of my other favorite parts of this movie, spoiler alert, is so one of the things in Dalton's past is he killed a man in Memphis.
Yeah.
It gets brought up a couple of times. And he killed him in self-defense. Maybe not. But pretty much in self-defense. So he has a big problem with killing people. Well, this Jimmy character, Jimmy is like the evil Dalton.
Yeah.
He's Brad Wesley's number one martial artist guy. Mm-hmm. He's always wearing a denim sleeveless shirt and one of those Indian bead necklaces with the arrowhead hanging off of it. So he fights Jimmy. Jimmy tries to kill the farmer that he lives with by blowing up his house. And he fights him, and they have this great scene, and he kills him. But, of course, Dr. Elizabeth comes on and watches the whole thing, and is like, she's just disgusted.
Yeah.
Disgusted.
That he protected himself.
Right. And Jimmy pulled a gun on him and just tried to blow up the farmer, but he rips his throat out, and he's a scumbag animal.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's great. At the end of the movie, Dalton happens to murder 5 people by storming Brad Wesley's mansion in retaliation. And then the doctor's right back on board.
Yeah, she's cool with it. She sees Brad Wesley get shotgunned down by her uncle and other prominent figures of the community.
And every business owner in this town is like a 60-year-old guy with some kind of facial hair.
Yeah.
A little bit overweight, you know, and they just shotgun Brad Wesley down, which is great. It's a great scene. It's hilarious. But she's totally on board with it. She just happens to walk in.
Then. It's like, oh, well, you just shot it, but throat ripping is gross. Come on.
Right, yeah. Don't be an animal about it. Just closer in, shotgun blast him four times. So that was a little bit of a question mark in the movie. So that was something I enjoyed very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Was there anything else you wanted to hit on?
Some of the lines in the movie are just fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Let's hit them.
some of the lines... God, I'm trying to think of some of them. What is the one? Of course, one of the classic lines is, so there's an opening scene where Dalton's done his observation, right? And he's talking to the bouncing staff and the bartending staff about what to do in case of a problem. And rule number three is be nice. Always be nice. The guy calls you a cocksucker. He's like, be nice. And someone's like, you're telling me being a cocksucker is something I should not... like have a problem with, and he's like, it's just two nouns put together and they're meant to antagonize you. And the guy's like, what if he calls my mama a whore? And Dalton just goes, is she? Yeah. And it's like, great because clearly they're having a conversation, and the guy like rips up a matchbook and throws it down angrily. Yeah, and of course he's the one that gets fired for banging the underage girl.
He doesn't come back. I really expected him to come back with Brad Wesley's Funky, because Terry Funk does.
What's ironic about that guy is he was one of the only guys that was in shape in the entire movie.
Yeah,
he was actually muscle. He's a perfect candidate for Brad Wesley's
gang. Yeah, for the first time you see him, I'm like, oh man,
he looks like a problem.
And,
yeah,
him and Patrick Swayze are definitely going to fight later.
Mm-hmm.
And then, no, the last time you see him is right after he pulls out of a teenager and gets fired in the supply room.
Right.
And then you never see him again.
Terry Funk was funny because he had a lot of lines early in the movie, and after that just got punched in the face.
Yeah, just got the shit kicked out of him.
There was a few exchanges. And then, of course, my favorite part of the movie, my favorite line, was a scene where Dalton and Jimmy are having their epic battle. This is my favorite line in the movie. And of course, as every fight in the movie goes, Jimmy, the antagonist, or the muscle for Brad Wesley, is winning the fight. And as he's got Dalton in some kind of million-dollar dream chokehold,
yeah,
he leans into his ear and says, I used to fuck guys like you in prison.
I guess I understand why you would maybe say that. But that doesn't make sense to say unless your intention is to fuck Dalton in the ass.
Right.
Like,
what's even weirder is, now if you have a problem with that, you could be accused of being homophobic. But this is in the late 80s.
Yeah.
In a redneck town, so, that's kind of a...
that's a weird thing to lead off with.
It's a homoerotic, threat. It's kind of weird, if I didn't know any better, I'd sodomize you right now.
Yeah,
it's kind of strange because... and then Dalton doesn't react to it. Dalton has no good lines hardly at all.
Yeah,
he pretty much just says,
he gets
screw you.
Pain don't hurt.
Right.
And then he yells fuck you 8 times.
He yells fuck you 100 times. And pain don't hurt, of course, when he's getting stitched. Because he stitched himself in one scene, which is weird because he gets slashed again and he goes to the doctor.
Because he has health insurance now.
He has health insurance. It was
one of his conditions.
So Jimmy says that to him, and then Dalton turns the fight around. Apparently, that's the trigger point.
Yeah, just threatened to fuck him.
He was going to kill me, but he's going to fuck me too. So now I got to fight harder.
I'm not having that. Yeah,
I'm not having any of that. I'm Dalton. But like you said, the other line where he says "pain don't hurt," which is great because he got cut with a knife in that scene. Speaking of another great scene, and he's all sweaty and wet, and he had a beer smashed over his head, and then he goes to get stitches in his ribs where he got cut. And his hair is perfectly blow-dry.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite parts, too. He got stabbed, and he's driving himself to the hospital. And on the way, he has time to blow-dry and hairspray his hair, which is fantastic.
Yeah. I also love his inhuman reaction time to... Elizabeth says the line... she's trying to convince him to leave town. She says, who's going to save these people from you? And then, immediately on cue, Emmett's house blows up.
Of course.
And, without even taking a second to process, Swayze is out the window, jumps down the roof onto a truck, and is running into the house.
Yeah.
I was like, I believe that this character would absolutely do that. But it was so weird. It's almost like they called action, but then cut in like 5 seconds ahead of where they started filming, just because his reaction was so fast.
Yeah, he reacted to it. Like, they're having an intense battle where basically Brad Wesley threatens to kill him and all his people, and he doesn't want to leave because he can't let that go. And then he's fighting with his chick, and like, they're having this intense battle, and then the house next to him blows up, and he's immediately like, well, compartmentalized, and he's right out the out the old door, and of course he pulls Emmett out of the burning house just in time. Emmett's the farmer he stays with, who has some great... He's like the over-hillbilly. He's like the ultimate hillbilly. And then, I guess the last thing to bring up is... We talked about this during the movie, too. One of my pet peeves in movies is when they make someone such a dick that it's like it's just overkill. So... my least favorite part of that is in the last Rambo movie. There's a Burmese war general, and there's a scene early on where he's making old people, children, women, whatever, run through this rice paddy full of landmines in a fun game, and if they stray off the course, they gun them down with like M16s or AK-47s. So about halfway through the movie, after this Burmese war general has burnt down villages for no reason, apparently, shot old women for no reason, like, just tortured and killed. They also reveal that he's a child molester.
Yeah.
About an hour and a half into the movie, And it's like, really? Like who was on the fence with this Burmese war general?
Oh, in case you didn't think he was a bag of shit.
Right. Like, well, when he blew up that old lady, she might have had it coming. Like, oh, he molested boys? Well, that's just too much. There's a scene like that in this movie where Brad Wesley's girlfriend hits on Dalton. And Brad Wesley's already, like, blown up a business and, you know, like, run people out of town and send his thugs all over the place to enforce his thuggery. And then there's a scene where it shows his girlfriend with a black eye the next day while she's doing fitness.
Yeah, you know, when Dalton comes to
the house the first time. And it's like, okay, I didn't hate him before when he burnt down legitimate businesses and had the shit beat out of people and smashed up cars. But then he also smacked his girlfriend around. Like, okay, he's not such a good person. It was a little over the top.
I just remember one of the other great lines that I wanted to throw in before we wrap up. It's in the breakfast diner scene when Elizabeth goes to use the bathroom and Sam Elliott looks at her and goes, "That girl's got too many brains to have an ass like that." It's like smart women can't have beautiful bodies.
What's even better about that scene in particular, now that you mention it, is in all the scenes preceding this, Dr. Elizabeth has been wearing skin-tight dresses.
Yeah.
And in that scene, she's actually wearing a really bushy, flowery skirt.
Yeah.
So, like, of all the scenes to comment on her ass, that's the worst possible one. Like, it's like, she's wearing a muumuu with a wrap over top of it. Like, yeah, it's just, it's a bizarre... But
bizarre point to say.
The camera is clearly on her ass, and she does the classic scale up as she's walking away.
Sam Elliott just leaning out of the booth to admire from afar.
Yep. So that was a fantastic line too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That got a big laugh out of both of us. There's a lot of lines in this movie that you can't really put your finger on. They're not as memorable because there's so many just ridiculous like one-liners where you're like, God, that is hilarious and awful at the same time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that.
So I think we're going to wrap it up now with our favorite moments.
Yes.
What was yours?
It's still got to be the "I used to fuck guys like you in prison." To me, that's my favorite part. Hands down, although, just the general bar scene at the beginning of the Double Deuce. Because it's like everything that could possibly go wrong.
It does, yeah.
Like, the only thing that wasn't going on in the Double Deuce was human sacrifice. So, like, the bartenders are beating up the patrons with, you know... And what's funny about it is there's still smoking hot chicks in the bar. I think that's one of my favorite parts, too.
Yeah, it's not a total sausage fest, even though it's a slaughterhouse.
Every guy in there is missing, like, three teeth, sleeveless t-shirt, like, you wanna fight? You wanna kiss my girlfriend's boobs? And, like, but yet there's these really hot statuesque girls, like, and they're wearing skin-tight 80s
people
dresses.
People get beer bottles broken with that. Yeah, we'll take the girls out here.
Yeah, let's have a fun night at the Double Deuce.
Let's go here to the Double Deuce for our bachelorette party.
Yeah, there's a human ear on my plate, so we'll just hang out here for a while. So I guess those are my two, the ridiculousness of the opening scene and the line with Jimmy to Patrick Swayze.
Yeah. I think for me, it's that entire Jimmy and Patrick Swayze fight scene. That's a great fight scene. Yeah. And like I'm a sucker for well done, like hand to hand
fight. It's actually a decent fight scene.
Yeah, it's really good. Like it's solid, and
there's not one of those. And what they did, Van Damme was known for this, is he would kick like slow motion and like pause after it. But this fight is just kick fight. And,
no posing. It's just it's a real fight.
It's a real fight.
Like it's very unrelenting.
Yeah, which is surprising. So it came out of left field. Yeah, it's great.
And then my other, literally every scene that Sam Elliott's in. Yeah. Sam Elliott was probably my favorite part of this movie. He's great. Like even the scene where he just rolls up on a motorcycle and he's just riding in with his hair just blowing in the wind.
He's got a lot of hair in this.
Yeah, guy. Yeah. And I'm not used to it.
Yeah, he had long hair and he just looked rough and tumble.
Yeah,
he was perfect for this part. They were like, "Who's a guy that looks like he's been in 50,000 bar fights?" And they're like,
yeah,
how about late 80s Sam Elliott?
Yep, nailed it.
There it is.
Perfect. All right, I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you, Chris Cohen, for coming on and guest hosting the podcast today. That's been Roadhouse. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time. All this month's episodes have, of course, been leading up to tonight's show, Struck a Nerve, the Pop Culture Mixtape, the Running Away from Explosions and Never Running Out of Ammo edition. If you're in Columbus, you can check that out at Wild Goose Creative, $5 BYOB. Show starts at 8 o'clock. It'd be great to see you out there tonight. Join us next time as I take Sumak Torgalkar and Brooke Cardis through part one of the Expendables trilogy, and we knock out the other two as well. Like the page on Facebook, subscribe to us on iTunes, send anything you have email-wise to howhaveyounotseenthispodcast@gmail.com, and we'll catch you next time.